We've probably all had that experience where you're driving along a really familiar route, like maybe your daily commute or the way to the grocery store.
Oh, yeah. Countless times.
Great. And suddenly you pull into the parking lot, you put the car in park, and you realize you have absolutely no memory of the last, I don't know, 3 miles.
That is a slightly terrifying, but deeply universal human experience. It's essentially highway hypnosis. Like your body was entirely capable of performing this highly complex coordinated act of driving a two-ton machine at 60 miles an hour, but your conscious mind was just, it was essentially vacant. You were physically present, but cognitively totally absent.
You were entirely on autopilot. And I mean, that's fine when the road is empty and the weather is clear and nothing unexpected happens.
Right, yeah.
But if a car suddenly swerves into your lane or like a deer jumps out, that autopilot state is the absolute worst place to be. You want your hands firmly on the wheel, you want to be fully alert, and you need to be actively engaged in the present moment so you don't crash.
Which is exactly the dynamic we are getting into today.
Yes, it is. Because our mission today, and we're drawing this directly from Chapter 11 of the RAF program, is to really explore a profound concept that takes the modern kind of buzzword idea of mindfulness and gives it a much sharper, more practical edge.
Yeah, it's a concept called clear comprehension.
Right, clear comprehension. And it is entirely about waking up at the wheel of your own life before you crash into an old reactive pattern.
So to understand where this specific tool of clear comprehension actually lives, it really helps to see the architecture of the RAFT program itself. The whole framework is built around an acronym, RAFT.
And we just pronounce that like the word RAFT, right?
Exactly, just RAFT. And it stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train. It's this very structured, systematic way of navigating our inner landscape and shifting away from those old patterns of escape or habitual responses that just, no longer serve us.
So today we're really focusing on that first phase, the recognize phase, because Chapter 11 sits squarely in this foundational stage.
It does, yeah.
The RAFT program sets up mindfulness of the body as the initial anchor, the thing that's keeping you grounded in the physical reality of the moment. And if we stick with the whole nautical theme here, if mindfulness of the body is the heavy anchor holding your raft steady against the current, then clear comprehension is the navigational compass.
I love that analogy. It's perfect.
Thanks. It chains the crucial tool that turns a moment of simply being anchored into a moment of wise, directed action. It tells you how to navigate the journey to the safe shore.
And that distinction between just noticing and actually navigating is so vital here. Because to truly grasp how to use this tool, we have to push past the surface-level understanding of what most people think of when they hear the word mindfulness.
Right. We aren't talking about the commercialized version.
Exactly. No passive relaxation or, just observing your thoughts float by like fluffy clouds.
Mm-hmm.
We are assuming you already know that genuine mindfulness requires rigorous attention. But if we look at the core Buddhist concept of sati,
which translates to bare mindfulness, right?
Yeah. Yes. Bare mindfulness. It is essentially the act of just noticing what is here. It is noticing the breath entering the nostrils or observing the physical posture, registering the feeling of tension in your hands. It's just a neutral, non-judgmental observation of raw data.
Which is incredibly useful, obviously, but incomplete on its own.
Right.
Because bare mindfulness gives you the raw data, but clear comprehension evaluates that data. It doesn't just notice what is happening. It actively asks what that phenomenon means and what, if anything, you should do about it.
Yeah, the evaluation part is key.
Think of it like a computer processing information. Like, bare mindfulness is like viewing the raw code of a software program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can see all the characters and syntax on the screen, but clear comprehension is actually running the code to see what the program is designed to execute.
That is a great way to put it. That analogy really highlights the active discerning nature of clear comprehension perfectly. It is the exact same attention, but it's equipped with a wider, more analytical lens.
Yeah.
And if we trace this back to its historical roots with Gautama, the Buddha, we find it in his teaching on the four anchors of mindfulness in the Satipatthana Sutta.
Which is a huge foundational text.
Huge. But what stands out in that text is how characteristically plain and unexotic Gautama's description of this quality actually is.
Yeah, when you read it, there is literally no mention of sitting in deep mystical meditation in a secluded cave for years on end.
None at all. Gautama applied this to the most ordinary, mundane moments of human existence. He explicitly instructed that a person should act with clear comprehension when going forward or turning back, when looking ahead or looking away.
Even bending and stretching a limb, right?
Yeah, exactly. He talks about maintaining this alertness while eating, drinking, tasting, waking, speaking, staying silent, even when defecating and urinating.
Which is wild, right? The fact that using the toilet made it into one of the most revered ancient philosophical texts, it just grounds the entire practice so firmly in reality.
It really does.
It strips away any illusion that liberation or profound self-awareness is somehow reserved for these special spiritual moments. The text is telling us that the mundane parts of our day aren't obstacles to the practice. They are the practice. They are where our lives actually happen.
So the goal is to hold the totality of an ordinary day in this state of lucid awareness and basically refusing to sleepwalk through the seemingly insignificant transitions.
But of course, translating an ancient philosophical directive into something we can actively practice today, we need a framework for that.
Right. We need to know how to break down this overarching alertness into actionable steps when we actually feel the pull of a habitual response.
And the RAF program does this by drawing out four specific aspects from the tradition. It operates almost like an internal diagnostic test.
Yeah, a sort of mental checklist.
Right. And instead of just listing them out like a table of contents, let's explore how these four aspects work together in a real messy everyday scenario.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's say it's 9:30 p.m. on a Friday. You are exhausted, you are stressed about finances, and your partner makes this offhand, slightly critical comment about how much money was spent on groceries this week.
Oh boy, that's a classic setup.
You feel that sudden, familiar flush of heat in your chest. The autopilot response, you know, the old pattern of escape is to immediately reach for your phone, open a shopping app, and just blindly scroll through things you don't need just to numb out the tension.
That is the perfect crucible for clear comprehension. Because in that micro moment between feeling the heat in your chest and opening the app, the first aspect we can deploy is to question our purpose.
Okay, so asking why we're doing it.
Exactly. You pause and ask, why am I doing this? Is this intended action skillful? Is it kind to myself or others? Does it actually serve the things I care about in the long run? This aspect carries significant ethical weight because it asks us to examine our foundational motives.
And in that Friday night scenario, the honest answer to the purpose question might just be, I am opening this app to escape the discomfort of this argument and give my brain a cheap dopamine hit.
Right.
And acknowledging that purpose strips away the illusion that you simply, you know, need to check something.
Exactly. You're calling yourself out.
But let's say the urge is different. Instead of escaping, your autopilot response is to aggressively fire back a critique of your partner's spending habits. Like you feel completely justified. Your purpose is to set the record straight and defend yourself. And that might feel like a necessary purpose in the heat of the moment.
Well, and that brings us directly to the second diagnostic check, which is suitability.
Suitability. Okay.
Yeah. Even if an action feels justified, or even if the overarching purpose is valid, like wanting to establish fair financial boundaries, suitability asks, is this the right action for this specific time, place, and context?
So context is everything.
Right. Is 9:30 p.m. on a Friday, when both of you are physically depleted and emotionally activated, a suitable time to launch into a deeply complex marital debate about finances?
The answer to that is almost universally no.
Yes. No, it is not.
I mean, the action might be necessary eventually, but the execution fails the suitability test completely.
Yeah.
It's the right conversation for like Sunday morning over coffee, not Friday night in a state of exhaustion.
Exactly. By evaluating suitability, you basically decouple the validity of your feelings from the urgency of your reaction. You can validate the need to speak without surrendering to the impulse to speak right now.
That is so powerful.
And as you are holding that pause, the third aspect comes into play, which is mindful presence. This requires tuning in to your immediate sensory reality. It asks, am I actually here for this moment?
So going back to our scenario, as you are holding your phone or preparing your verbal counterattack, are you actually feeling your feet on the floor? Are you noticing the shallowness of your breath? Or has your mind completely detached from your body and time traveled into this hypothetical future where this argument leads to a massive blowout? Or maybe transported back to 3 years ago when a similar fight happened?
Oh, the time traveling mind is so common there.
Mindful presence forces you out of the mental time machine and pins you to the undeniable physical reality of the present second.
Because you cannot choose a skillful response if you are reacting to a phantom argument happening entirely inside your own head. You must be grounded in the room you are standing in.
Right.
And that grounding allows the fourth and final aspect to emerge, which is clarity. Clarity asks the most piercing question of all. Am I seeing the situation as it genuinely is, or is my perception heavily distorted?
And the RAF program highlights that the most common culprits for cognitive distortion are craving, aversion, or confusion. So in our Friday night argument, aversion is likely painting the entire situation in these extreme colors. Aversion distorts the partner's minor comment into this existential attack on your character. And craving distorts the shopping app, making it appear as an absolute urgent necessity for survival rather than just a temporary hollow distraction. Clarity is basically the act of wiping the fog off the lens and recognizing the distortion for what it really is.
So when you combine those four inquiries, purpose, suitability, mindful presence, and clarity, you transform a chaotic, reactive spiral into a moment of deliberate architecture. You completely dismantle the autopilot.
Okay, but let me push back on this for a second, because knowing human nature, introducing a four-point philosophical checklist into highly charged emotional moments, it sounds like a recipe for complete mental gridlock.
I get that a lot, yeah.
Right, because if I have to cross-examine my own psyche with four different analytical frameworks every single time I reach for my phone, open the fridge, or respond to an email, won't I just freeze up entirely? It sounds completely exhausting, like carrying this heavy backpack of philosophy everywhere you go.
Well, the beauty of this practice is that the ancient texts explicitly warn against that very trap of over-intellectualization.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is absolutely not a demand to scrutinize every millisecond of your existence, which would indeed be paralyzing. You are not pulling out a clipboard and writing an essay on your motives. The application of clear comprehension is meant to be a micropause.
Okay. So the goal isn't a lengthy deliberation. It's more of a reflex.
Precisely a reflex. Think about the physical act of typing on a keyboard. When you first learn, you have to consciously look for every single letter, deliberately commanding your finger to move to the G or the K.
Oh, yeah, the hunt and peck method.
Exactly. It is slow and taxing. But with practice, your fingers just know the terrain. You just think the word, and the evaluation of where the keys are happens instantaneously, completely beneath the level of conscious effort. Over time, checking purpose, suitability, presence, and clarity condenses into a single, fluid moment of recognition.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. It's like checking your blind spot before you change lanes on the highway.
Yeah.
Like, at first, when you learn to drive, you have to consciously recite the steps. Check the rearview mirror, engage the turn signal, physically turn your head, look out the window. But eventually, it all just merges into one fluid, split-second safety check. You just do it. The mechanics become secondary to the outcome.
That's a perfect analogy. And exploring why breaking this autopilot is so essential actually takes us into the deeper mechanics of human behavior. Because the RAF program points out a profound vulnerability here. Our attention is least free, and our judgment is most compromised when our primal drives kick in.
Those deep evolutionary drives.
Right. We are wired with these deep-seated drives to protect ourselves from threats, to promote our status or resources, and to satisfy our desires.
And when those survival drives are pulling at us the hardest, that is exactly when a deeply ingrained pattern of escape kicks into motion. We don't even consciously decide to initiate the pattern. The brain just executes the script.
It just runs the program.
Yeah, you're already half a bag deep into the potato chips, or you've already hit send on the angry text message, and you suddenly wake up from the highway hypnosis and think, wait, how did I get here?
And the science behind why this happens and why the micro pause of clear comprehension works so brilliantly to counter it is absolutely fascinating.
Let's get into the science of it.
So from a neurobiological perspective, this autopilot behavior is heavily reliant on a region of the brain called the basal ganglia. The basal ganglia is essentially the brain's ultimate efficiency engine. It operates on a process called chunking, where it takes a sequence of actions you perform regularly, like the physical motions of driving or the emotional reaction to stress, and groups them into a single automated routine.
So it's kind of like the predictive text algorithm on your smartphone.
Oh, that's good.
Right. The basal ganglia looks at your past behavior, registers the current cue like a feeling of stress, and instantly autofills the rest of the sentence for you.
Mm-hmm.
It basically says, ah, we are feeling stressed. Based on historical data, the next step is to consume sugar or scroll social media, and it executes the routine to save metabolic energy because thinking deeply is biologically expensive.
The predictive text analogy is brilliant because it illustrates the speed of the mechanism perfectly. The basal ganglia operates much faster than conscious thought. And alongside this, your default mode network is highly active, which is the brain circuitry associated with mind wandering, rumination, and being detached from the present moment.
So you have a wandering mind paired with a highly efficient execution engine.
Exactly.
Which is fantastic for tying our shoes while planning our day, but an absolute disaster when we are trying to break free from a destructive habitual response.
Exactly. So when you practice clear comprehension, when you take that intentional single breath pause to ask those four diagnostic questions, you are fundamentally altering your neurochemistry. You are acting as the backspace key on that predictive tech.
I love that.
By delaying the motor output for even 1 second, you starve the basal ganglia's automated loop of its momentum. That tiny delay provides just enough time for the prefrontal cortex to come fully online.
The prefrontal cortex being the slower, highly advanced part of the brain that handles executive functions.
Yes.
It is the seat of logical planning, intentional decision-making, and most importantly, impulse control. It's basically the adult in the room.
And sustained practice actually shifts the balance of power in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The deliberate pause reduces the dominance of the default mode network and the basal ganglia, and heavily recruits the prefrontal cortex during critical moments of choice. You are actively rewiring the circuitry of how you respond to stimuli.
And what's really remarkable is that this neuroscientific mechanism aligns perfectly with the core pillars of modern psychology. I mean, we're essentially talking about metacognition here, the ability to think about your own thinking, to observe your mental processes from the outside.
You see this operationalized across almost every evidence-based therapeutic framework used today.
Yeah, the RAFT program highlights several of these intersections, like cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, is built entirely on the premise of examining the automatic thoughts that precede an action, which completely mirrors the clarity aspect we discussed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
And acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT, focuses relentlessly on clarifying your personal values and ensuring your chosen actions are suitable and aligned with those values, which is a direct parallel to checking purpose and suitability.
And dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, seeks to cultivate what they call a wise mind, integrating emotional experience with rational thought rather than being dominated by one or the other. This requires the exact mindful presence clear comprehension demands.
I am always fascinated by how mindfulness-based practices utilize this mechanism for a technique known as urge surfing.
Oh, urge surfing is fantastic.
Right. Instead of fighting an impulse or a craving, which usually just makes it stronger anyway, you use that micropause to simply observe the physical sensation of the pull. You recognize the urge to act out a pattern of escape, but you don't immediately comply with it. You just ride the wave of the sensation as it peaks and inevitably subsides. By widening that tiny gap between noticing the impulse and acting on it, you strip the craving of its absolute power.
The convergence of all these disciplines is just striking. We can trace this from modern cognitive therapies through cutting-edge neuroscience all the way back to ancient Greek philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
Aristotle extensively discussed the concept of phronesis, which translates to practical wisdom. It is the cultivated capacity to discern the most appropriate ethical action in a highly specific complex situation.
The overwhelming consensus across human history is undeniable. Whether it's an ancient philosopher, a modern neuroscientist, or a contemporary psychotherapist, the core message remains identical. Creating a tiny, deliberate gap between a biological impulse and a physical action is literally the only place where genuine human choice exists.
That's so true.
If there is no gap, there is no choice. There is only an automated reaction dictated by past conditioning. The pause stops reactivity dead in its tracks.
The pause that clear comprehension creates, however incredibly brief it may be, is quite literally the birthplace of free will in our daily lives.
Okay, so we understand the philosophy, we understand the neurobiology, and we see how it fits into the broader RAFT framework. But how do we bridge the gap between understanding this as an intellectually cool concept and actually deploying it in our lives today?
Well, the RAFT program offers a highly accessible micropractice to start building this specific cognitive muscle. It doesn't require setting aside 30 minutes on a meditation cushion. You can do it today using a completely mundane, ordinary physical action.
Something as simple as reaching to turn on the television or grabbing your keys or even just standing up from your desk.
Exactly. Any action that you typically do without a second thought. Just choose one small movement. And in that fraction of a second, right before you initiate the physical action, insert a single conscious breath.
Just one breath.
Just one. And within the space of that breath, rapidly deploy the clear comprehension check. What am I about to do? What is the underlying purpose? Is this the suitable moment for it? Am I actually present or am I lost in thought?
The immediate question people have when this is what happens next. Like, if my answers reveal that I'm distracted or my purpose isn't perfectly skillful, do I have to abort the action entirely? Does opening the fridge when I'm bored mean I have failed the exercise?
No, and understanding that is vital for long-term practice.
Yeah.
After you hold the pause and ask the questions, you simply carry on. You either continue with the action you originally intended to take, but now with full awareness, or you naturally transition to whatever action you realize you would genuinely rather do instead.
So the objective isn't to force a perfect or morally superior outcome or to rigidly judge yourself for operating on autopilot.
Not at all. The practice is the pause itself. The ultimate goal is cultivating the brief, unvarnished honesty that the gap creates. Because if you do realize in that split second that you are acting out of an old pattern of escape or a habitual response to stress, that brief flash of honesty provides the necessary clarity to choose differently.
Yeah.
You aren't suppressing the biological pull or shaming yourself for feeling it. You are illuminating it clearly enough to make a conscious choice, mm-hmm. rather than being blindly dragged along by the current.
It transforms bare awareness into wise, intentional living. It is the profound shift from merely noticing that your hand is resting on the steering wheel to consciously deciding where you actually want to drive the car.
It is a remarkably small habit in execution, but when practiced patiently and consistently over time, it possesses the genuine power to reshape the entire trajectory of life.
Before we conclude this deep dive, I want to ensure you have the context and resources to explore this further. We've been unpacking the concepts from Chapter 11 today, and the RAFT to Freedom Workbook is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. Incredibly, they are making the entire 66-chapter program freely available online for anyone who wants to engage with this material.
Which is amazing.
It really is. You can access all of it by visiting raft2freedom.org.
And as we wrap up our analysis, I want to leave you with a specific point of self-reflection taken directly from the RAFT program. Carry this question with you as you navigate the rest of your day. Could bringing clear comprehension to a moment of reactivity change your relationship to it, even slightly? Think of a habit you return to almost without deciding to make it what would happen in that split second, just before it happens, if you paused.
That is a brilliant diagnostic question to keep in your back pocket.
Yeah.
And to anchor everything we've discussed, I'm going to share a final thought from Buddhist scholar Bhikkhu Anilayo, quoted at the end of the chapter. He writes, "Establishing mindfulness in this way allows a crucial pause before taking action in order to enable a full apperception of the situation and a sober evaluation of the appropriate way to respond to it. This is vital."
So powerful.
And to unpack that word apperception, it essentially means fully perceiving a situation by connecting it to your past experience and broader understanding. It means seeing the whole board, not just the single piece in front of you.
It is the fundamental difference between living as a passive passenger in your own mind and actively taking the wheel.
Absolutely. But before we go, consider this deeper context. Our brains evolved to automate behaviors to conserve energy. That basal ganglia loop kept our ancestors alive. But we now live in an environment from the frictionless design of one-click shopping to the endless algorithmic scroll of social media that is meticulously engineered to exploit that exact automation.
Right, they know how the brain works.
Oh, exactly. These modern systems are literally designed by behavioral psychologists to bypass your prefrontal cortex entirely and feed your autopilot. So the question becomes, in a world intentionally structured to keep you distracted, reacting, and sleepwalking through your choices, could the simple, rebellious act of a one-second pause be the ultimate tool for reclaiming your neurosovereignty? It's something to think about the next time you instinctively reach for your phone. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. Catch you next time.